Welcome to the West Shore History Podcast. I'm your host, Sue Harper. This episode is a little different. I want to describe when present day meets the past. I call this episode Relic Hunter. When I was at university, I took several archaeology courses and even considered continuing my studies in that direction. But for some unknown reason, almost a flip of a coin, I decided on history instead. Whether it was the right decision, I'll never know. But what I do know is that I've always had an interest in archaeology, discovering objects from the past and trying to figure out its history and uses. As I love history, the use of archaeology and understanding the past seems a logical leap. As such, I recently took up metal detecting. Officially, apparently I'm called a metal detectorist, but I prefer relic hunter. Sounds a little more interesting and mysterious, although I am no Lara Croft racing after villains. Anyway, recently I was out with my new metal detector, mainly trying to figure out the settings and getting more comfortable with its capabilities. I went to an area that, at this point, I want to keep fairly secret. However, for a clue, it's a well-known place that I've spoken about in a previous episode. After spending only about 15 or 20 minutes sweeping, I had a glorious, interesting bleep sound and high reading from the control box. It was time to dig. Initially, I felt a little disappointed as I dug up a nail, but on my pinpointer, I got another hit, yet another nail, and then another hit, finally pay dirt. At first, I thought it was just an old, non-interesting jar cap, but turning the dirt encase lid over, there was some kind of white-looking insert. I put it in my pouch for further investigation later, as all good relic hunters do. I covered the hole back up and threw some leaves and other forest debris on top, as if I'd never been there. Returning home later, and after a nice hot shower to get the dirt off, the investigation of what I had found began. With a little tap water and cleaning, I discovered inside the cap was white glass. On that white glass, around its outside, it read, Boyd's genuine porcelain lined cap. Now my interest was spiking. It's difficult, if not impossible, to assign a specific year of production to any of these types of liners, but the liner itself does give up some clues. Presumably, the first ones date from approximately 1869. They were placed inside zinc mason jar lids. The very earliest versions are said to have been made in transparent glass, with milk glass versions, like the one I have, introduced approximately 1871. It's also assumed by other historians that most of the earlier versions of these liners have the name Boyd's embossed on them. Later versions may or may not have the name included in the lettering. So what I found is an early version probably made in the 1870s or 1880s. I had found and was holding a piece of history of the Langford area that was around 145 years old. The zinc lid must have helped preserve and protect the glass liner's excellent condition, which is an added bonus as the liners are apparently often found separated from the lid. A major misnomer associated with this artifact is that it is labeled as if it was made of porcelain. However, it is actually made of a transparent and/or translucent cloudy glass, which has been characterized by archaeologists as opaque white, but also known as milk glass. The one I found has a slight colored swirl in it as well, which is unusual, as I have not seen it in any photos online. This suggests to me that it is an early version that I found. Before canning, people in colder climates relied largely on smoking, salting, drying, and fermenting to keep themselves fed through the winter. Going to the late 1800s, canning of fruits, vegetables, and other things started to become commonplace. You have to know that at this time in history, refrigeration was generally unavailable, so canning food in jars was becoming a practice in most households. Prior to 1858, canning used glass jars. Home canning involved using wax to create an airtight seal above food. Jars were stoppered with corks, sealed with wax, then boiled. It was messy and hardly foolproof. The idea of heat-based canning had actually emerged in 1806 and was popularized by Nicolas Ebert, a French cook who had been inspired by the need to preserve foods for long periods during the Napoleonic Wars. In 1858, an inventor and tinsmith from New York named John L. Mason had invented the mason jar. He designed a machine that could cut threads into lids that made it practical to manufacture a jar with a reusable screw-on lid. The tinsmith's innovation created a seal inside the lid, something that had never been achieved before. Prior to the invention of the Boyd's glass liner in 1869, canning jar lids were made of either entirely of glass or entirely of metal. A much cheaper zinc lid lacked a buffer between the metal and food. This would cause the food to react with the zinc, which would taint the food inside and give it what it was described as a terrible, perceptible taste. If you've ever chewed on tinfoil and experienced the metallic taste, I can imagine this would be somewhat the same. On March 30, 1869, Lewis R. Boyd was issued with patent number 88439 for an improved mode of preventing corrosion in metallic caps. Very little is known of the man personally. According to the 1870 U.S. Census schedule for Brooklyn, New York, he was born in 1832 in Connecticut. His name appears on the fruit jar scene in New York City in around 1862, when he and two other men gained control of the patent rights for the screw caps and jars originally owned by John L. Mason. Boyd's liner system retained the cheap screw-top zinc cap, but placed the glass liner between the metal and food, ensuring that only the glass ever touched the food. According to the Boyd patent of 1869, the introduction of efficient and safe home canning jar technology, represented here by the Boyd's lids, offered availability to a year-round variety of palatable and nutritious foods for everyone. Boyd's porcelain lining patent of March 30, 1869, was reissued later on October 25, 1881, to the Consolidated Fruit Jar Company, assignee of the late Lewis R. Boyd, deceased. According to descendants, he died at age 42 in 1874. With the patent in place, the Consolidated Fruit Jar Company was the only company allowed to manufacture Boyd's lined lids. The Boyd's patent expired in 1886. So, from the discovery of a jar lid comes also the discovery of a rich history behind it. Its impact on people living back then cannot be denied. The ease of use and affordability of mason jars, along with the Boyd's genuine porcelain lined cap, helped home canning spread across the nation in the late 1800s. Not only among farmers, homesteaders, and settlers, but even urban families who began family traditions of canning sauces, pickles, relish, fruit, and tomatoes. As I sit with this relic from the past in my hand, I wonder who touched it back in the late 1800s. What farmhouse pantry did it probably sit in? What food did it help preserve and store? And how did it eventually become disregarded and covered by the soils of time, to be unearthed almost 145 years later by a curious relic hunter? Maybe someday there will be a museum where relics of the past and the telling of Langford's history will have an actual home, where the city of Langford will appreciate and understand the importance of the city's past, where people can visit and learn about the territory of First Nations peoples, its forests, farmland, cabins, and homesteads. Until then, the artifacts I and others possess will remain in our own personal collections, waiting. Until next time, I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the West Shore History Podcast. Please consider using the link in the episode description to become a subscriber and to help support future installments. And hey, tell your friends about the podcast too.